Do you want more energy, better sleep, and better health? Who wouldn't? Get a free Scalar Light no obligation 15-day trial at scalarlight.com.
Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is The Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello and welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. I hope you've had an amazing week wherever you are in the world. Thank you for tuning in to listen to the show this week. We're going to kick off as usual with some of the items of news in the world of diabetes that we can find online for you. Then we are going to move into a song followed by an interview, which I think you're going to find fascinating. It's all about glaucoma, and it's with a doctor over in the United States in New York who is a bit of a specialist in this area, so much so that he's actually devised his own method of treating. So looking forward very much to that interview with Dr. Daniel LaRoche. He's the one that chose the songs for today. We've got a couple of interesting ones there, particularly the latter one. If you're listening to the end of the show, yes, it's a bit of a loud one, that one. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the show. Let's kick off with some of the items in the news. So, first one I came across. These are from diabetes.co.uk. And this one is 2 apples a day could keep type 2 diabetes at bay. That's a little bit of a play on the old rhyme, I think. My mum is a dentist, obviously retired now, and in the days gone by, it used to be an apple a day keeps the dentist away. Well, this headline is saying 2 apples a day could keep type 2 diabetes away. Apparently, this study was done by an Australian research team, and they said that eating 2 portions, and I stress here, eating 2 portions of fruit a day reduces the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 36%. However, they did not see the same pattern emerge from those who drank 2 servings of fruit juice on a daily basis. The researchers think that it's because there's a link between fruit intake and insulin sensitivity, and therefore it means that those who consumed more fruit had to produce less insulin to reduce their blood glucose levels. Dr. Bondono said this is important because high levels of circulating insulin, otherwise called hyperinsulinemia, can damage blood vessels and are related not only to diabetes but also to high blood pressure, obesity and heart disease. Must confess that's something I've slipped out of, eating as much fruit as perhaps I should do. I suppose most days I do have a pear with my dinner. If I have a salad, I'll have a pear cut up in there. But certainly I don't have 2 portions per day, as they're suggesting is good for you. But do remember, it is the whole fruit, not just the juice. The juice with no fiber isn't so good for you. The next item is not specifically relating to diabetes as such, although people with diabetes, particularly on the feet, it can lead to a drier skin there. This one is all about itchiness. So itching study sheds light on the way the issue occurs. Apparently, there's good news for itching sufferers, as researchers say they've found significant differences between non-hairy and hairy areas of the skin in relation to itch issues. Chronic skin itching can be extremely uncomfortable and is very common among people who might suffer from skin conditions such as eczema, urticaria, and contact dermatitis. And I'm just actually as I'm sitting here reading this, I'm actually scratching my leg because I've got an insect bite on my leg, which is itching like crazy. Anyway, that's by and by. Professor Liang Han from the Georgia Institute of Technology's School of Biological Sciences said, itch is a significant clinical problem, often caused by underlying medical conditions in the skin, liver, or kidney. Due to our limited understanding of itch mechanisms, we don't have effective treatment for the majority of patients. Until recently, it was thought that the mechanisms behind itchy skin were all the same, but Professor Han's research team has found evidence to suggest that there is a difference between itches in non-hairy and hairy areas of the skin. I'll leave you to read up on that. If you suffer from itchiness in any form, then maybe that's an article you want to have a quick look at. Next one is a little bit scary. It's regarding passive smoking when pregnant, having long-term effects on the child. Apparently, for the first time in medical history, it's been proven that exposure to secondhand smoke in pregnancy leads to a heightened risk of the baby developing a disease in adulthood. The team from Virginia Commonwealth University Massey Cancer Center say their findings have linked passive smoking to something called disease-related gene regulation in babies. I'm going to skip through it, so do go and read it. But it says that they found the higher the level, the more likely the newborns would have epigenetic marks on their genes, which control the development of their brain function, as well as genes related to diabetes and cancer. The next one is also scary. Experts say diabetes figures have doubled in the last 15 years. In the UK, this is. NHS figures have shown that there are now 5 million people in England who have type 1 or type 2 diabetes. I'm not going to quote the figure they used for 2004-05 because that's a lot higher than I would have expected it to be. I think they may have made a mistake on their website there because, well, basically, if the figure that they have there for 2004-05 was doubled, it would be 8.2 million. I'm not quite sure what the true figures are there, but the general picture is that the number of people with diabetes has gone up to the point of it having doubled. So if it's 5 million now, I guess it must have been about 2.5 back in 2004. That article goes on to say that the increase in type 2 diabetes is particularly worrying, as during the pandemic, research has shown that people with the condition are twice as likely to die from COVID-19. Next article will really please my son-in-law, who's a little bit of a virtual reality fan, plays games on virtual reality. This one is a study which shows that positive benefits of virtual reality might have on the medical world. Healthcare professionals should be given a short, sharp dose of empathy to help improve their care and make fewer mistakes, researchers have said. A team from the Dalhousie University in Canada have reviewed two studies involving virtual reality and looking at how the technology could assist the medical world. In recent years, VR has become popular within the gaming world, and it works by simulating a specific experience that in this case will emulate certain symptoms a person might encounter. The user can then interact using special electronic equipment such as a helmet with a screen inside or gloves fitted with sensors. Apparently it helps the healthcare workers to get a bit of a feel for what a person might be going through with a specific disease by virtually having it for a little while. It also helps them to improve how they interact with a person, a real person who has got the condition. Final one here again on diabetes.co.uk, which is one which, I think we're probably not going to come as much of a surprise, but at the same time, it is a bit of a shock. Obesity-related hospital admissions reach more than 1 million. This is in England from 2019 to 2020. Apparently, over 10,000 were admissions to hospital caused directly by the obesity, where people were seeking weight loss treatment or gastric surgery. But in total, there were 1.8 0.02 million hospital admissions where someone's obesity was listed as the main or the secondary cause for their visit. This number is up from 876,000 the year before. So it was up quite considerably. The data also showed that 2/3 of the admissions were female, and it was higher in poorer areas of the country when compared to more affluent places. Professor Stephen Powish, NHS England's medical director, has commented on the newly published figures, calling them shocking. He said, "Today's shocking figures are a growing sign of the nation's obesity crisis, which is putting hundreds of thousands of people at greater risk of becoming severely ill with COVID, as well as heart attack, stroke, cancer, and other deadly diseases." And I'll, of course, add in there, such as diabetes. That's pretty much it with the news for this week. I hope that you found some interesting articles there. Do go along to diabetes.co.uk's website to have a little bit more of a read there. We're going to go straight into our first song that's been chosen by our guest on the show this week, Dr. Daniel LaRoche. And the song that he chose first was by Marvin Gaye, and it's called What's Going On. Enjoy it.
Hey, what's happening, brother? What's up? This is a big party, man. Yeah, brother, I can dig it. Stop right on. What's up? Hey, man, what's your name?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Judge us simply 'cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
Right, right on, right on.
Right on. Right. 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 Right.
Okay, that was Marvin Gaye and What's Going On. You're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And my special guest this week is Dr. Daniel LaRoche. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly.
Yes,
from New York, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. And I've got a little bit of blurb about you. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but you studied and received your bachelor's degree from New York University. A medical doctorate with honours in research from Weill Cornell University Medical College. Underwent a medical internship at Montefiore, is that how you pronounce it, hospital. And finished your ophthalmology residency at Howard University Hospital in Washington, D.C., where you were chief resident in your third year. And later you completed your glaucoma fellowship at New York Eye and Ear.
Yes, thank you.
And you're now the director of glaucoma services and president of Advanced Eye Care of New York.
Great.
It's great to have you on the show. Before we get into any of the medical stuff, please tell us why you chose that song, Marvin Gaye, and What's Going On.
Well, that was a very popular show back when it was written by Marvin Gaye, the song by Marvin Gaye. And, you know, we have a lot of unrest in America, as you guys probably have seen from across the pond.
Yeah, it's spread over here as well. So.
with a recent insurrection of the Capitol, a lot of racial unrest. We had thought we'd made a lot of progress and we wouldn't see this in 2020, 2021. In my particular specialty of healthcare, there are dramatic healthcare disparities that still exist. And so Marvin Gaye was speaking to that back then, and it's still very relevant today. And so my approach to healthcare, I'm a big advocate for health equality, health justice, social justice, because we're on the front lines of that every day here in New York City. Although New York City is one of the richest cities in the world, 30% of the population lives in poverty.
Wow.
And a lot of it goes along racial and ethnic lines as well, with tremendous disparities. So that was my reason for the choice when you asked me the song.
Great choice, great song, and yeah, it's a bit of a shame that it was, what, in the 70s that was out? Am I correct?
60s, 70s, yeah, 60s, 70s. 60s, 70s.
And that it's still relevant is a bit scary, really, isn't it? It's, yeah. Anyway, let's hope it's going to become less and less relevant, but still a great song. Okay, so please... I've got down, I mentioned some of your credentials earlier on, and one of the things is that you're the inventor of an intrascleral ciliary sulcus supracoroidal microtube technique. Now, I'm not going to get you to go straight in with that one. We'll come back to that a little bit later. But please, tell us what you're here to talk about today.
Well, I'm a glaucoma specialist. Glaucoma is one of the leading causes of blindnesses in the elderly, particularly in the African-American community. And we have tremendous new techniques to treat glaucoma much earlier to help prevent blindness from glaucoma. And people who are diabetics have a 2 times higher rate of developing glaucoma as well. Right. And so I'm here to talk about, answer any questions about diabetes. I can talk about glaucoma. My approach to glaucoma, the standard of care is to treat glaucoma with eye drops first, then laser, and then surgery. But my approach to glaucoma has changed. And people over 50, I like to approach it with surgery first. We see that with earlier cataract surgery and angle surgery, trabecular bypass surgery to open up the drain, we can dramatically lower the pressure. We can remove the enlarged lens, which is usually the thing that causes the glaucoma. And in many cases, get people off of eye drops. And their chances of going blind are dramatically reduced. But the key is you have to have a very skilled surgeon. I've been doing this for over 25 years. So I'm a very skilled surgeon. I mean, I wouldn't recommend this type of earlier surgery in someone who's not a good skilled cataract surgeon in that respect. They should probably be out by about maybe 5 to 10 years out to really have a good experience in cataract surgery, because you want to make sure you have an uncomplicated early cataract surgery and trabecular bypass. So these are some of the things I'm here to talk about today.
Okay, cool. Well, we look forward to hearing a bit more about that. For the layman, and the audience are largely going to be people who maybe got diabetes or maybe have a family member with diabetes, what exactly is glaucoma? How would they know they've got it? What
What are the symptoms?
Okay. When you touch your eye, the eye has a pressure. The normal eye pressure in the eye is about 15. The average mean normal eye pressure is 15. And for most people up until age 40, they're at 15 doing A-OK. Mm-hmm. The lens in the eye, over age, with age, it gets larger. Okay, and the people who are diabetics, it gets larger a little bit faster. Wow. Okay, so what that does, that rubs up against the iris, which is the brown part inside the eye that releases pigment that blocks the drain. And also when the lens gets larger, it can push the iris forward to close off the drainage. And that leads to slow creeping elevation of eye pressure. Mm. The average mean eye pressure in people with glaucoma is about 18.
Wow.
So now, here in the United States, the standard of care is to treat that with eye drops to lower the pressure. Okay? But the problem with that is that the eye drops does not address the mechanism of the glaucoma, which in many cases is the enlarging lens. Mm. So what I've done, I've changed my approach to glaucoma, and with studies that support this, by taking a cataract out early, taking a lens out with cataract surgery out early, because a patient has an enlarged lens, maybe about this big, but the intraocular lens that we place in the eye to replace it is very thin.
Right.
So that frees up a lot of space inside the eye. And cataract surgery alone lowers the eye pressure by about 2 or 3 points. So it can bring that elevated eye pressure of 18 back down to 15.
So it's having...
At the same time...
Sorry to interrupt. Is having cataracts one of the risk factors of getting glaucoma then, or...?
Not so much just the cataract alone, but enlarged lens.
Right.
Because some people have an enlarged lens and have 20/20 vision, but they have this enlarged lens. Because the definition of a cataract for surgery is usually decreased vision up to 20/40.
Right.
Well, from 20/20. But nowadays, we're seeing that people are having these enlarged lenses, and you can do 20/20 cataract surgery in these patients and have a much better outcome to lower the eye pressure, what we call clear lensectomy. Right. Okay? So a patient may have 20/20 vision. Usually we say you have cataracts around 20/40 vision or less, like deteriorating vision from opacification of the lens. Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing that people can have this enlarged lens in the eye that's contributing to elevated eye pressure. And so by taking that out earlier with uncomplicated lensectomy or early cataract surgery, and if they have glaucoma, trabecular bypass with a stent, Schlemm's canal type stent, dramatically lowers the pressure and addresses the mechanism of the glaucoma in many of these patients.
Because it's the buildup of pressure that damages the retinal nerve. Is that the problem?
In the majority of cases, yes. Right. There are some other etiologies where you have decreased blood flow or ischemia to the eye or decreased blood flow to the eye or very low blood pressure that can lead to glaucomatous-like damage to the optic nerve, okay, and loss of visual field. But in the majority of the patients I see, it's usually... almost always associated with elevated eye pressure in the majority of patients, the overwhelming majority.
Right, okay. I'm sure some of the listeners are going to be thinking, they're bound to talk about diabetic retinopathy. I think there's a lot to talk about with glaucoma, and I think maybe we can get you on the show another time to talk about the diabetic retinopathy.
Sure.
With the glaucoma thing, with diabetes generally, I like to the approach of talking to people about their management, about being in what I call the diabetic sweet spot. And that's where they've got all the knowledge they possibly can have about their diabetes. They know what their own personal risk is of developing foot problems or eye problems or whatever it might be. So they've got their own risk score. And then, of course, the final bit is they take action. So getting the knowledge, you're giving us a bit of knowledge about what glaucoma is. What about the risk factors for people? You've touched on diabetes, and earlier on you talked a little bit about the disparity between different races, etc., with medical care in New York, etc. What are some of the other risk factors associated with glaucoma? Who's most at risk?
Okay, the people at risk for glaucoma is associated with older age, okay, particularly over the age of 40, and as you go older in age, 50, 60, 70, 80, the risk of glaucoma increases.
Right.
If you've had trauma to the eye, okay, if you have things like diabetes to the eye, people that are farsighted, nearsighted, have higher risk factors for glaucoma. Certain ethnic groups, African-American, Afro-Latino patients, it's usually because of the lack of access to healthcare and late diagnosis. in that respect. Those are the major risk factors.
Right, okay. So diabetes is one of the main ones, though, would you say?
I would say it's one of the main ones. Okay. People who are diabetics, though, do have twice the rate of developing glaucoma. And the main reason for that is because of the enlargement of the lens that takes place. That's one of the first signs of that people can have diabetes. When their blood sugar is high, you get very thirsty, very hungry, you increase urination, urinating a lot, and blurred vision. One of the things I tell all my diabetic patients is make sure they keep all their glasses, because when their sugar fluctuates, when it goes high and then it goes back down, that affects the refraction in the eye. They may need to keep all their glasses. So one day, one pair of glasses works, and depending on what the sugar level is, the other day, the other glasses may be better. So I always tell them, I said, just keep all your different glasses, depending on what your sugar is, and try to keep your sugar down as best as possible.
Listeners can't see me smiling and sort of laughing almost, because I'm very aware of that. And in fact, my optician wasn't that aware of it, because was it 4 or 5 years ago I did diabetes. I've had type 2 diabetes, and I did diabetes reversal diet, the low carb, and it just so happened that I'd gone for an eye test just before starting this diet. So then I went to pick up the glasses, and they were dead lost. They were no good whatsoever when all my blood sugars were back to normal. So yeah, it's very, very relevant. And I know that, you know, if your sugars are out of control, you do get that blurred vision. And I think that's a good tip. Keep your glasses, because, you know, it's also a bit of a wake up call to you that your blood sugars aren't maintained if you are getting that blurred vision. So the blurred vision is one thing that might alert you to the fact that you might have glaucoma. Are there any other things that people can you feel the pressure in your eye? Can you, is it associated with headache?
No, you can't feel the pressure in your eye. So that's why it's very important that people get an eye examination.
Right.
Okay. When you get an eye examination, a doctor will take your history, check your vision, check your eye pressure, take a look at the cornea, take a look at the lens, dilate the eyes, take a look at the optic nerve. People with glaucoma, if you have high pressure in the eye, it can lead to optic nerve excavation, where the cup gets much larger inside the eye, and they can look and see if that's a problem. Take a look at the retina, check the eye for retinopathy. It usually takes about 7 years from when someone develops diabetes to develop diabetic retinopathy. And the early signs of that are retinal hemorrhages and exudates that you won't notice, but a doctor can see it. If the doctor sees it, they can discuss things like diet and exercise. It's extremely important. Low-carb diet that you mentioned is very important. In America, we have about 50% of people almost obese. And so I'm constantly, every day, discussing with my patients about diet and exercise, eating lots of salads, vegetables, baked chicken, baked fish, walk 10,000 steps a day. To really try to, you know, take good care of your health, because by taking care of your body, you'll be taking care of your eyes. And so then also, they'll take pictures of the back of your eye. If they notice anything like retinopathy or optic nerve excavation, they'll take fundus photos, and or they can do measurements of the retinal tissue, the nerve fiber layer, with the OCT, or check the peripheral vision to make sure if there's any signs of glaucoma. But then, so there's different tests that can be done. And if you're okay within a normal range, they may just tell you to come back in 1 year. But if there's some early findings, abnormal eye pressure, something looks suspicious or abnormal, they may want to see you a little more closer in about 6 months or so. And so that's very important. I mean, it's very important, because you can have pathology in the eye, but you won't experience that. By the time you notice poor vision, with glaucoma in particular, you could have lost 90% of your vision. You can't bring it back.
Wow.
With diabetic retinopathy, if you get like macular edema, proliferative diabetic retinopathy, you can lose a lot of vision, and then you can't get it back. So, you know, going to your internist, your medical doctor, getting a full checkup, getting that eye examination once a year is extremely important.
So is the test the one where they puff the air into your eye? Is that the one when you go to have your eyes tested? Is that the one?
Well, a lot of opticians and optometrists will do the puff test. It's not as accurate. Ophthalmologists will do a test called Goldman Appellation Tonometry, where we put a yellow anesthetic fluorescein dye in the eye. And with the Goldman Appellation Tonometry, you have a device that actually comes and just touches the diaphragm of the eye and has Myers, so we can more accurately assess the eye pressure in millimeters of mercury. And that's the standard of care. That's the gold standard of care, Gorman Appalachian Tonometry. So you want to see an ophthalmologist for that and get a good, complete retinal examination. Ophthalmologist has medical training. It's able to really detect disease earlier as well.
Okay. So is that invasive, or is that – that's not invasive. It's just a
– No, it's not considered invasive. Right. But it does come up close to the eye.
Right, okay. The tear from there. And then the other thing, they look at a dilated optic nerve examination, I was reading as well. Is that right?
Yes, dilated optic nerve examination to take a look at the optic nerve, take a look at the retina, because you can see early nerve fibrillary defects in glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, retinal hemorrhages, diabetic retinopathy, exudates. So you can see all kinds of different things. You can just Google these pictures. You can press diabetic retinopathy on Google, glaucoma on Google, optic nerve, and you'll see what the normal looks like, what abnormal looks like. And you don't really notice these things yourself. That's why it's important to see your specialist about.
Better still than going to Google, because Dr. Google can be dodgy. Why don't you give the listeners your website? Because I was actually looking on there last night and looking, not that I was stalking you or anything like that, but just wanted to check out some of the things there. And you've got a video on there about glaucoma, which is really interesting, and the technique that you use.
Yes.
So maybe you can give your website details so that they can go and
check website. Out. My website is www.advancedwithadicareny.com. You can put my name, Daniel LaRoche, MD, Google. My website will come up. We have a lot of videos about glaucoma, diabetes, diabetic retinopathy. I need to take a look at as well.
Brilliant. Okay, cool. So diabetes is a risk. You've mentioned age. We can't do anything about that. We all get older. Can't do anything about our ethnicity. What are there any other things that we can do to minimize the risk of developing other than managing our blood sugars really well?
I think the main thing is, really taking care of your health with diet and exercise. Diet and exercise and going to the doctor and getting checked and getting screened for diabetes, going to the ophthalmologist, getting your eyes checked. Those are the best things you can do, because if you can pick it up early, and you have good dietary habits, exercise habits, and specifically like lots of salads, lots of vegetables, baked chicken, baked fish, low-carb diet, Mediterranean-type diet. Those are really good right there. Mm. Integrating exercise. Now, a lot of people will say, some of my patients say, I did a gym membership or whatever, but they rarely go to the gym. A nice way to integrate exercise is by getting up maybe a half hour earlier in your day and doing some calisthenics at home, going for a walk, so you can integrate it in your daily activities. Wow. When you go to work, instead of maybe taking the bus to work or the train to work, go down one stop later on the train, walk one stop on the train, or two stops on the train, and then take the train. Wow. Or if you're going to drive, park to a parking spot that's further away and walk. Try to integrate it into the routine of your daily activities so you get 10,000 steps. By doing that, you can get activity done every day. You don't even have to go to the gym. If you can do 10,000 steps a day, you don't have to go to the gym. And by every day, trying to improve your diet slowly but surely. Unfortunately, we live in a society with a lot of processed foods, fast foods, processed foods, things of that nature. A lot of these processed foods are not that healthy for us. They make us gain weight, have a lot of carbohydrates, comfort food, and things of that nature. And we really have to steer away from that and change some of our habits. Because as you age, your metabolism slows down.
Yeah.
And you can't burn the calories like you were burning when you were 20 years old or 30 years old. So you really got to cut the caloric intake down and maintain yourself. And the best medicine is healthy food. That's the best medicine is healthy food. And taking care of yourself with exercise. Because a lot of times, particularly with this pandemic, people were staying at home, we were on Zoom all day, sitting down all day. That's not good. You really have to find ways to integrate activity. So those are the best ways to help take care of yourself, to help maintain a good circulation in your body, to counteract the effects of diabetes and decrease blood flow, and glaucoma and decrease blood flow as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's the old same advice, isn't it? Yeah, I think the listeners, and we all are sort of hoping that somebody's got this magic answer, but it's always down to your lifestyle, to the exercise and what you're putting into your body.
Well, there is one magic answer that's come out recently. The anti-VEGF treatments for diabetic retinopathy.
Okay.
For people that have pretty advanced diabetic retinopathy with bleeding in the back of the eye, proliferative diabetic retinopathy, leakage, macular edema, and have like pretty far gone, we used to use just laser alone as first-line treatment, which would help, but it would destroy the retina as a side effect.
Wow.
Now we have anti-VEGF treatments. That's anti-vascular endothelial growth factor.
Right.
Okay. And the vascular endothelial growth factor is a protein that when you have decreased blood flow to the retina, the body makes this protein to grow abnormal blood vessels that bleed easier and leak easier and actually damage the retina. Mm. We have these new anti-VEGF antibodies that block that protein and can really make these vessels disappear and make the leakage disappear and help people restore vision about 30% of the time and preserve their vision 90% of the time. Mm. Now, unfortunately, these treatments are short-acting. You will also often need these treatments maybe once a month. You have to go back to the retina specialist to give them these injections once a month. But that can really help preserve vision in people with advanced diabetic retinopathy. So that is a new magic type of thing that is available out there. And once again, you want to try to avoid getting to that far. But even people who have a diabetic retinopathy that's well-controlled, with well-controlled diabetes, just over time, like having it for 20 or 30 years, it takes its toll on the retina and the body. Mm. And so those are options that are available if you get to that stage to help preserve your vision. And your retina specialist will work with you and let you know if you need these things and these treatments that are available. And I would encourage you, if you do have this bad retinopathy, don't be afraid of the injections. I mean, some patients are like, I don't want to get an injection in my eye.
Sounds horrible.
Whatever. You know, it sounds horrible, but they, you know, they prep the eye, they clean the eye, they put topical anesthetic on the eye. With Q-tips, they'll numb the area. So you really barely feel, you don't feel anything. And the needle is a very thin needle, the size of a hair. And it will preserve your vision. So you can see your grandkids and see the things that you want to do. So that's a nice little magic piece that is available that we didn't have, you know.
Is that available, well, I'm going to say across the world, I suppose. I mean,
it's available across the world.
It is, yeah.
There's a less expensive one called Avastin that's used commonly, and I use that very often. There are more expensive one called Lucentis and Eylea that are a little bit longer acting and more expensive on label. But Avastin works very, very well. And like I said, unfortunately, it's short-lived. You do have to have repeated treatments, but it works really well. I mean, I've seen people with really bad disease that would normally go blind within 6 months who have their vision preserved for several years.
So if you were having those injections and you also sorted your lifestyle out and you were able to get your blood sugars really well controlled, I assume that you would need the injections less often, or is it still, you've still got the process going on behind the scenes anyway?
No, if you have your sugar well controlled, and exercise and diet, that can all, that can diminish the rate of the injections.
Right.
That can diminish the rate of the injections as well.
Cool.
It's complementary. And you'd be surprised. I've seen some great anecdotal stories of a lot of reversal of diabetic retinopathy from diet and exercise alone. Mm. I've seen people, you know, get rid of their type 2 diabetes from diet and exercise alone. Uh-huh. So that's a real part of the treatment. I spend a lot of time as an eye surgeon discussing diet and exercise with my patients every day.
Mm. Brilliant. I know we're getting close to the end of the time, but I did mention earlier on this technique that you've developed for the... the interest, I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong. You can share what it's called, just quickly just tell people what it is about, because it sounds fascinating what you do there.
Sure. Well, like I said, my approach to glaucoma is with an early surgical approach first to take away out the enlarged lens that exists in patients with the glaucoma that's causing high pressure, and then doing a stent trabecular bypass, a Schlemm's canal stent, like a Hydra stent, or goniotomy type procedure. But that doesn't work alone in everybody. Some people have more advanced disease. That'll probably work about 80% of the time. The other 20% of the time, some people may need something an additional procedure. And there used to be a device called the CyPass device that diverted fluid from the anterior chamber to the suprachoroidal space, which is a portion of the eye beneath the sclera. But it was taken off the market because the positioning of the tube was too close to the cornea, the front part of the eye, and that led to corneal swelling. So I came up with a technique where with the silacin tubing, we can put the tube in a suprachoroidal space, but instead of putting it next to the cornea, we put it behind the iris in the anterior chamber. And so then that you don't have the corneal swelling that can occur, corneal edema that can occur, and you still get the benefit of suprachoroidal outflow. And so that's worked well. We've presented at the World Glaucoma Meeting, American Glaucoma Society. And so it's a nice technique that's available to access a suprachoroidal space. And so for some people that don't need a bigger procedure like a trabeculectomy, which is the gold standard, but has a 30% rate of complication that can occur, there's a lower risk of complications with this technique.
Right.
For people with mild glaucoma, it's not something else that we can offer them as well. So that's how I came up with the technique. And it's for some people, not for everybody. Like I said, my initial approach is taking the cataract out or the lens out first and trabecular bypass, because that's, I find, the safest procedure. A little bit of a bigger procedure compared to that, but not as big as a trabeculectomy or a glaucoma tube shunts. So we have armamentarial procedures for patients with glaucoma to help preserve the vision over time. And that's one of the procedures.
Brilliant. Well done for developing that. And I'll be hopping over to New York if I develop any eye problems, I think. check you out. Or check your clinic out. I don't even know. I'm a podiatrist, and I often say to people that, you know, your feet are the things that are going to take you to places, but your eyes are going to be the things that are going to be helping you see, to build those memories, like you mentioned, you know, with your grandchildren and what have you. So the feet and the eyes, the podiatrist and the ophthalmologist can really work together in a powerful way. And I really want to thank you for your time today, because it's really a value to the listeners to understand and understand the urgency. I think the one thing I'm getting from you most of all is the urgency about early diagnosis of these problems and getting checked, making sure you know what your risk is. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for your efforts in terms of sharing this information and knowledge with your listeners.
We'll get you back on to do an in-depth talk about retinopathy maybe at some point if you want to. But for today, I think that's probably enough. Maybe if you want to just share your website again, but then you've got a song that you want everyone to listen to as well. And I'm going to let you introduce that. And we have been very careful about which version we're going to pick. But if you can just share why you chose that song and what it is, please, and your website.
Well, this next song, since you asked me to pick two songs, is by Public Enemy. It's called Fight the Power. And I'm in New York City. I'm in the United States. And I'm sure you've all seen on CNN a lot of the social unrest that we're having, and a lot of the racialized climate that we're having. And in my practice, I'm very big about addressing healthcare disparities and social health and addressing social determinants of health and social justice as well. And this was a song that was very popular back in the 1970s by Public Enemy. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of issues still persist today. And so I hope you enjoy it. I asked him to play the clean version. There's, you know, Flavor Flav use some descriptive languages sometimes, but, you know, the clean version should be okay for the audience here. And, you know, I want to thank all those listeners that are altruistic and have helped to advance solutions to these problems. Mm. We need more altruistic people to help advance solutions to all these various problems, so we can all live in peace and strive for success and happiness and all the things that we all want in life.
Absolutely. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day, because I guess the day is young over there, whereas here it's nearly midnight.
Well, thank you so much for accommodating my schedule.
No worries. No worries. Okay. Take good care then.
Thank you.
Another summer. cause I know you got soul. Hey, listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Hey, giving what you're getting. Know what I know in while the black man's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Hey, our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power! Fight the power! We got to fight the power that beats! As the rhythm's designed to bounce with calcifental rhymes, designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got to pump the stuff to make it tough. From the heart, it's a start, a work of art to revolutionize, make a change, thump it straight. People, people, we are the same, no one not the same, cause we don't know the game. We need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? Yeah. My beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness. Oh, let's the show.
You got to tell me what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Olsen with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot. Living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.